this is the first, oops, push the other button, then push this one. Too many moving parts. This is the first of our summer series of sermons. How many of you even remember what that is? The sermons this summer are going to come from song titles that you select. This morning's title is Why Me, Lord? How many of you know who wrote that song? Raise your hand if you know. Okay, I don't see any hands. Okay, I'll give you some hints. And when it becomes clear to you, you may raise your hand. He was born in Brownsville, Texas, June 22nd, 1936. Unless that's your birthday, that probably wouldn't mean much to you. His first dose of fame came when Sports Illustrated wrote about him as a college rugby player. An aspiring novelist, his first published works were The Rock and Gone Are the Days, published in the Atlantic Weekly. A Rhodes Scholar, he graduated from Merton College, Oxford, and then enlisted in the U.S. Army. Not many Rhodes Scholars do that. He served as a ranger and then a helicopter pilot and finally a teacher at West Point. I don't see any hands going up yet. Okay. He was nominated for a Golden Raspberry Award for Worst Actor for his role in Heaven's Gate, and then won a Golden Globe Award for Best Actor for his role in A Star Is Born. Still no hands. He's been married three times, but he's probably best known for his romantic relationships with Janis Joplin and Barbara Streisand. I thought that was going to get somebody. Okay, here's the big one. He formed a singing group called The Highwaymen, along with Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, and Waylon Jennings. Okay, finally, the song Why Me was written by Kris Kristofferson. We often hear the question, why me, in response to some hardship or reversal of fortune. Oh Lord, why is this happening to me? But in Kristofferson's version, it's really a reflection on the good things of life. The lyric goes, what have I ever done to deserve even one of the pleasures I've known? Now, we transition into the challenging part of the summer assignment, and that is, how do I in some way tie this to the prophet Elijah? Well, last week we did some Bible study. This week, I'd like for us to reflect on a very familiar Bible story. We're going to back up one chapter from our reading from 1 Kings and set the stage for what happened immediately before this confrontation between Elijah and the prophets of Baal. Elijah prophesied, as I said earlier, during the reign of King Ahab of Israel in the time of the divided kingdom. Ahab was married to Jezebel, a princess of Sidon, and a fanatic devotee of Baal. Ahab thought that the prophet was a troublemaker because he never seemed to have anything good to say, kind of like fake news. So Elijah had been in hiding for some time from the king. The nation had suffered through a very severe drought. Climate change, there's really nothing new under the sun. It's all repeats itself over and over again. And then we read in 1 Kings 18, after many days, the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year of the drought, saying, go present yourself to Ahab, I will send rain on the earth. So Elijah went and presented himself to Ahab. Elijah then challenged the king to assemble all Israel before him, especially the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah. Elijah suggested a contest as a test. Two bulls were to be prepared for sacrifice, and the prophets of Baal were to prepare one, and he would prepare the other. Then the prophets of Baal were to pray and for fire to come and consume their offering, and then Elijah would pray to Yahweh. It was agreed, and the test was on. The prophets of Baal prepared their offering and prayed all morning long with no response. And here I will read from Eugene Peterson's paraphrase of this passage as it's found in The Message. Desperately, they jumped and stomped on the altar that they had made. And by noon, Elijah started making fun of them, taunting, saying, "Call a little louder. He is a god, after all. Perhaps he's off meditating somewhere or other. Or he may have gotten involved in a project. Or maybe he's gone on vacation. You don't suppose he's overslept, do you? And you need to wake him up?" They prayed harder and louder, cutting themselves with swords and knives, a ritual common to them, until they were covered with blood. That ends the quote from Peterson. Then Elijah said, "All right, now it's my turn." So he went to his allotted space and rebuilt the altar that had been there with 12 stones representing the 12 tribes of Israel. He dug a wide trench around the altar and to be filled with water. He cut up the bull and to pieces and placed it on the altar. And then he instructed that the altar, the wood, the bull, all be drenched with water three times until they were full of water and the trench around the altar was filled with water. And then they prayed, and immediately fire came down from heaven, devoured the sacrifice, the altar, and took away all the water. Then Elijah ordered that all the prophets of Baal be gathered up, taken down to the brook Kishron, and massacred. But then, and this is a little bit of a surprise, when Jezebel threatened to kill him, the valiant prophet who had single-handedly taken on the 850 prophets became so terrified that he fled for his life and prayed to die. "I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for Israel has forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I am left alone, and they are seeking my life to take it away. Why me? Why am I so endangered?" What happened to the courageous prophet? What happened to the one who stood before the king and in before the opposing prophets and called down fire from heaven? Why was he now so taken with fear? Well, no one can predict how they might act under the stress of extreme danger. You may have been reading recently that Scott Peterson, the former Broward County Sheriff's Deputy who failed to intervene in the mass shootings at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School last year, has been arrested and charged with multiple counts of child neglect, negligence, and perjury. It is alleged that he cowered in fear and failed to take actions that might have saved the lives of some of the young people under his protection. I don't know why Scott Peterson acted the way he did. I guess I'm not really sure exactly what it is that he did. But I cannot remember a first responder ever having been charged with serious crimes for failing to take an action. Now, such inaction is a chargeable offense in the military, although it's been seldom prosecuted in recent times. It is said that we all have a fight or flight reflex that kicks in when we're under times of extreme stress. I would suggest that there's a third reaction to stress, and that is to freeze. I would also contend that we are not hardwired into these responses. We may have a tendency, but we do not always instinctively react the same way to a threat. I have observed two radically different responses from the same individuals in combat. I'm sure that not everyone exhibits these particular responses, and one does not always immediately follow the other, although in my experience, they do tend to be sequential. There are times when the threat of combat so overwhelms an individual that they become incapacitated with fear. It's really not about courage. It just happens. You just cannot respond. They may flee, they may freeze, but they do not respond. At a later time, facing similar circumstances, that same individual may engage the threat with what I would call reckless abandon. Sometimes this turnabout is due to feelings of guilt or shame over their past behaviors, an attempt to redefine themselves, if only in their own minds, as someone of courage, an attempt at redemption. The first of these behaviors is often referred to as cowardice. The second is sometimes called heroic. But in truth, neither is appropriate. The appropriate response is a thoughtful one that is steady and predictable, so that people know what they can expect from you. But such responses are not always within our grasp. Sometimes it's not just a choice. We have been discussing how we might share our faith with others. Now, in our day and time, unlike the time of Elijah, this is not a life or death threat. But it is something that can spark a bit of a fear reaction. What will people think of me? Will I say the wrong thing? Not sure what to do? Isn't it just safer to do nothing? If we are to have a thoughtful response, we must have prepared ourselves. Soldiers and first responders are trained and practiced so that they know how to respond to a threat. One cannot anticipate every possible situation, but they try to cover as many bases as they can so that they have a plan. Even if the plan falls apart, if you have a plan to start with, you are less likely to falter and to freeze or flee in the face of an opportunity. When the prophet Elijah had a plan, he was zealous for the Lord of hosts. He confronted the prophets, he taunted them, he made fun of them, and then went to war with them. But when he was caught off guard, he ran away and he hid. In this morning's gospel lesson, we have two appropriate responses to evangelistic opportunities. This was the session's Bible study this past week, and I hope that some of you went home and sorted it out because we didn't give the answer. They had to struggle for it, just like the rest of you will have to. We read in this morning's gospel lesson that when the swineherd saw that what had happened, they ran off and told it in the city and in the country what they had seen the Lord do. when you have seen what the Lord can do, go and tell. And then Jesus said to the man who had been healed of the demons, return to your home and declare how much God has done for you. And then it says, so he went away proclaiming throughout the city how much God had done for him. When you see what God can do in the world, tell somebody. And when somebody asks you about your faith, tell them what the Lord has done for you. And if the Lord hasn't done anything for you yet, maybe it's appropriate to hide in a cave, to sit through the wind and the earthquake and the fire until the voice of God speaks to you and you have something to say. For when you realize what God has done for you, you have good news to share. And when you stay focused on that good news, you know how to share it with others. Maybe, Lord, I can tell someone else what I've been through myself on my way back to you.